You're not sick, Amelia, no.
No?
No, you're a little farsighted.
This is the Farsighted Network.
This is the Farsighted Network.
This is the Farsighted Network.
Thanks for listening.
Enjoy the show.
Welcome back to a special episode of Grindhouse Messiah. You'll be the second time you hear our lovely voices in just a week's time. So I'd like to introduce my lovely, lovely co-host, Blaine. How are you today?
What's going on, man? I'm doing good, man. We're recording during the daytime. The sun's out. I'm in my new little home office I've been enjoying. So I was in here. Did you know?
I did.
If you wear, I'm very new to technology, everyone, and I'm sure I sound very dumb, but I've been taking these here Zoom calls. Wearing headphones while recording, I think it's a good thing to do. Wearing headphones during Zoom calls, I learned that I was being the nerd. I was the nerd in the class wearing the headphones, and I did it for a few days until my boss was like, man, that's some nerd shit, dog. And I was like, all right, I gotta stop doing that. So I just want to let all the other old men out here listening to this show, don't wear headphones on Zoom calls or you'll look like a bitch.
Oh, well, to be fair, many people at our age probably don't even know what the fuck a Zoom call is.
Me neither, but I know what it is now, and now I know you look like a big old nerd if you're wearing a headset.
Yeah, I'll probably still wear a headset if someone Zooms me, but whatever.
Zoom them back.
Yeah, I'm nerdy as fuck, and I have no problem with that. So, that said, right, before we kick in to, like, our normal format where we talk about some movies, where we're going to talk about the Rob Zombie trilogy with the third movie coming out this week. We're lucky enough that Blaine and I got to talk to Bill Moseley, one of the stars, for what, like 15, 20 minutes. It was a nice time. We really got really enjoyed talking to him. I don't think there's a whole lot more to intro, just to say we're going to play that and then we'll come back. Does that sound good?
Let's do it.
All right. I'll see you guys on the flip-flop. That was really dumb.
Hey, Mr. Mosley, how are you doing?
I'm doing good, thank you.
Awesome. Fantastic, hey, thank you so much.
Thanks for taking the chance to talk to us. I'm gonna actually sit down for a second and not try to talk over my partner. I'm Justin, and that's Blaine. And Blaine, why don't you just dive right in?
Okay, fantastic. Thank you so much, Mr. Mosley, for meeting with us today, and chat real quick about the film. Let's start right at the beginning of this series and your collaborations with Rob Zombie. Before filming House of a Thousand Corpses, did you ever think that Otis would become the horror icon that he is today?
I did not, actually, no. I did not. I had no idea. I wasn't really thinking about that. I was trying to memorize my lines and hit my marks.
Oh, absolutely.
And it was very funny because with House of a Thousand Corpses, of course, you know, we shot it in early 2000. And before it came out, there were troubles with, there was 9/11, there was Columbine, there was the Senate saying you can't sell R-rated material to or advertise to children under 17. So were all kinds of different issues there that really made it difficult to put out House of a Thousand Corpses. You know, it finally came out, I think it was 2003. So for 3 years there, we wandered in the wilderness and had no sense of how this was going to be received. And, you know, when it finally did come out and everybody, you know, how it did come out and everybody was so excited about it, and enough so that there was the sequel, Devil's Rejects. That was pretty fantastic. I had never done a character more than once, so it was my first time at actually doing a sequel, revisiting a character, and that's the Otis from Devil's Rejects. And then to revisit him yet again 14 years later was pretty wild, and yet it really felt kind of like riding a bike, like you just get back on and, you know, hit the pedals.
Yeah, you kind of mentioned like the role, doing the role twice and now three times. It seems like each movie, you know, your character has developed quite a bit. Going into this next one, there's kind of a sizable shift in the family structure and the roles that each of you guys kind of play. How did you approach the changes of the character from one movie to the next?
I would like to say that I sat down and really studied and went over my, you know, method acting and all that stuff. I didn't really do any of that. I just showed up and, you know, tried to keep my lines in my head and hit my marks. The one effort I did make, of course, was for about a year and a half, I grew that darn beard. And so that was my probably my biggest contribution. And then of course, you know, but Otis really is still in there, so it wasn't that hard to find Otis and channel him for another go around.
Absolutely, and I mean, like, with the films being as brutal as they are, and kind of with the previous films being lumped in that term that we all hate, you know, the torture porn kind of moniker there. When people dismiss these films for their brutality or discredit the merits of the film for whatever reason, what would you say to that? I mean, what makes these films more than just kind of that violence for violence sake?
Well, I mean, violence for violence sake, a.k.a. gratuitous violence, is really, you know, a lot of fun.
Right.
You know, we... And that's really what attracts the fans. It's not our, you know, deep dialogues or monologues. It's, it's kicking some butt. I'm so glad about it because it's raw and nasty and, most of the time undeserved. Sometimes it's deserved, in which case it's even more fun. But, you know, when you compare it to all of the big, what I call the corporate horror films of today, that deliver a couple of jump scares but don't really go for it. They play it safe, so they get a nice R, a nice soft R, and everybody comes out of the theater and, you know, I don't know, they've eaten their popcorn and spent their money on parking and tickets. And somehow they're not quite fulfilled. If they're a real horror fan, they're going to love this movie because we do go down. We're not worried about you know, the little sisters of the poor, you know, giving us a thumbs up or thumbs down. It's going to be thumbs down all the way. And I think that's really what the horror fan wants. That's certainly what I want. You know, I look at the horror films of today, although I got to say that I do love Get Out. I loved A Quiet Place. I loved, really loved Midsommar. I thought that was fantastic.
Yeah, which I think
I love, and Matt, and Mandy, you know, Mandy, I guess, is probably considered a horror film. You know, so all of that, you know, that's my kind of stuff. And so I'm just glad, I was very grateful that Rob just, you know, maintained his dark and gritty vision of things. And so that we could really get out there and, you know, kick some butt, you know, for the sake of the horror fan.
Absolutely. You guys really do. And also kind of tackling multi-genres in this new film as well, with kind of bringing in a lot of Western elements and a lot of kind of that Bandido subgenre that, you know, was so popular in the, you know, 50s and 60s, and some fun nods to it. So yeah, it's definitely for big fans of horror and I think film overall.
Absolutely, and you can do it. You know, I mean, that's the thing about Rob that's so much fun is that you know, he's a big fan of all kinds of movies. Obviously, mostly horror, but westerns and all kinds of action adventure stuff. And you know, be able to have that kind of a palette and just paint it out there in you know, raw colors and just you know, turn to us, me and Sherry, Sid, Richard Brake, and just say, here's the deal. Just go for it. I mean, that's what I like to do. That's really been, if I would, you know, not to pat myself on the back, but if there's been a hallmark of my career, it's like, I like to go for it. You know, and to work with Rob is for that, you know, for many reasons, but that's, you know, one of the main ones that he likes to go for it too. And what you see is what you get. And if it's up on the screen and it disturbs you or makes you squeamish. I mean, I remember when we were doing House of a Thousand Corpses and we were shooting one night and he brought me into his trailer, him, me and Cherry, to see the scene where I shoot the cop after maybe 30 seconds of silence. And
right.
Poor Walton Goggins. But, you know, he said that was the scene that at the time Universal wanted him to cut out, because that was, you know, glorifying violence against the police. It was, you can't have 30 seconds of silence in a movie, you know, et cetera, et cetera. There were a lot of different reasons they cited. And, you know, that was the dark heart of the movie right there. And, you know, I was so impressed and excited by Rob fighting hard to keep that in, because that's really the way it goes these days. Is, you know, horror's big business, and let's not rock the boat. Let's not get too gnarly here. Let's just, you know, give them a good scare and, you know, sell them a bunch of stuff. And, you know, I love the fact that Rob is kind of an outlaw in the genre, and really just, you know, encouraging us with these great stories and great lines and great characters to really get out there and do something nasty. I love that.
So I know we have to kind of wrap our time.
Yes, sorry. I'm so sorry.
It's okay. I would keep it track, too.
All right.
So don't worry.
Thank you.
So I know this is kind of our last question here for you, Bill, but I wanted to ask you, because you mentioned about how the time when the original movie, when House of the Corpses came out, it was delayed so many times because of the national discourse and stuff. And it's kind of interesting that right now, because of the recent round of mass shootings and the discourse around it, Universal actually just pulled the release of movie The Hunt. And I was just curious what you thought about that, and, you know, if you had any takes on, you know, was it right, was it wrong, what would you do, you know?
Well, that I really couldn't speak to it, because I don't really know much about The Hunt
right.
or the politics of the studio. What I do know is that horror movies are certainly not the cause of violence. In fact, they might be, I wouldn't necessarily go as far as to say they're the cure, but what they do is they allow people to, you know, work out that stuff, you know, in a darkened theater or in front of their own big screen TVs. And, you know, there's a beginning, there's a middle, there's an end. They work it out. Sometimes the bad guys win, sometimes the good guys win. But it's an exercise that's done passively, and it's an entertainment, and I think it's actually great. I think it's good to have horror movies. I love them. You know, there's never been, I played Chop Top and Luigi Largo and Otis and all kinds of crazy characters, and, you know, I haven't gone down to the 7-Eleven and, you know, started, you know, swinging a claw hammer.
Exactly, that's true.
It's like I leave it on the set, you know, and
awesome.
And that's, you know, that's the same with Grand Guignol in France and, you know, all kinds of stuff. So, you know, don't give me that. I thought it was interesting that, you know, that Walmart decided, instead of banning the sale of guns, they banned violent, you know,
video games. Yeah.
I mean, that's absurd, okay? That's cuckoo.
Yeah, it really, really is.
You know, it's like if a lion eats you and then you ban the sale of kitty litter.
Right.
So I don't know. I mean, all of that stuff. Yes, that stuff is none of my business. You know, everybody's got their own opinion, and you know, I'm an actor in a horror movie, so you know, let's not get too excited about my opinion. You know, the good news is it's, you know, one man, one vote. And my vote is to go see Three from Hell, you know, September 16th, 17th, or 18th.
No doubt. We'll be there too in Atlanta and Philly and probably our listeners from wherever the heck else. But, before I was,
right,
I would be in trouble if I didn't mention, my wife plays, roller derby, and a bunch of the girls on her team are like diehard fans of you and your movies. And they told me I had to say hi on behalf of the Rockstar Roller Derby. So if I didn't do that,
Rockstar Roller Derby, right on.
Yeah, there you go.
Dude, when I was growing up outside of Chicago in Barrington, Illinois, I used to watch roller derby on black and white TV on the Family Zenith, and loved roller derby. So I'm a big fan. And let's not forget, let's hope that someday they evolve into roller ball, because that's one of my favorite things, too.
Nice. Hey, well, thanks so much, Bill.
All right, guys. Great to talk to you.
We're back. I hope you enjoyed the conversation with Bill. Bill, to me, just a genre legend. I love that guy.
Oh, yeah. No, and he was fantastic. We had a lot of fun. He answered a lot of questions and went on some pretty fun tangents. So hope you guys all enjoyed that. I don't know if you guys caught on, but he's in a new movie you guys might have heard a little bit about.
I think it's called, like, Three from Atlanta. Is that right?
Three from Heck.
I was trying to insult Atlanta by calling it hell, but I actually like Atlanta. That was
I feel like this is a terrible bit we're doing right now.
Yeah, well, I mean, we're good at terrible bits.
Look, edit out terrible bit.
Don't edit out terrible bit. So, in all seriousness, though, I really enjoyed talking to Bill, and that movie is coming out. If you're listening to this right now when we drop the episode, the movie comes out next week. So if it's already out, then go check it out. If it's not out yet, then go order your tickets.
Yeah, it's going to be playing with Fathom Events. And it's going to be a 3-day event, Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday. So make sure, and they're doing giveaways on each of those nights. So they're doing a double feature on one. They're giving out posters on another, as well as doing a behind the scenes. So it's kind of cool. So they're offering, you know, different incentives for different nights. So you guys make sure you're going to Fathom Events to support that.
Yep. And we'll definitely have the link for that in the show notes. So definitely check that out. So without further ado, let's actually jump into those movies. So, Blaine and I have, already professed, some of our love, or at least like, for Rob Zombie movies in the past, specifically talking about his Halloween movies, which we actually both like more than the Halloween movies that everybody else reveres. So I don't know, maybe there's something wrong with us, or maybe there's something wrong with all of you. But in all seriousness, Blaine, have you been a Rob Zombie fan basically since he started doing movies?
Yeah, I mean, really since movies. I mean, I know, as we talked a lot about on those Halloween episodes, I'm not a big fan of his music, just not my bag. But, you know, that dude's made a lot of money off of it, so good for him. But yeah, I mean, I was instantly excited about him making a film just because, like, the aesthetic. As much as I wasn't a fan of his music videos, on the other hand, were always fucking cool. I mean, right. It was always these cool, like, throwbacks to, you know, sci-fi and horror films and everything like that. So when we heard the news, probably what, like, late 90s, probably 98 or so, 99, that there was, like, an actual, like, Rob Zombie made a horror movie, and it's got, like, guys from Jackie Brown in it. It was kind of before, I mean, like, maybe I was just out of the circle, but I didn't really know who Sid Haig was as a name. Like, I only recognized him basically from, like, you know, Foxy Brown and Truck Turner and shit like that. But yeah, I remember just being super hyped, and then the wait started and the legend built around it of, like, this movie that never seemed to come out until finally in 2003, I got to go see it Easter weekend. I remember skipping church with my brother and not telling our folks we came in town yet to go watch House of a Thousand Corpses. And I loved it then. I've seen it probably 25 times since, and I'm still a big fan. I mean, it's definitely got some first movie issues in there, but dude, it's solid.
I definitely agree. And actually, Bill talked about that craziness of never knowing if the movie was going to come out, and then all of a sudden it was out. You know, like all that crazy stuff. So it's pretty cool to get to hear him talk a little bit about that. It's definitely a weird thing. It was all, you know, kind of the same kind of bullshit that's happening or happened with, you know, the Hunt getting pulled this fall. You know, there was a lot of different stuff going on with people being complete assholes in the real world. And then it was kind of spilling over to people being afraid to put out movies that were, you know, somehow associated with that dreaded term torture porn in the early 2000s, which I would argue this. Well, first of all, I'd argue that's a stupid term. But even outside of the term, I don't think the zombie really is torture porn in necessarily any sense, although there's definitely torture in all of his films. But yeah, I didn't see House of a Thousand Corpses back then. I want to say I saw it right about the time, maybe even after Devil's Rejects came out, or maybe right before Devil's Rejects came out. But I saw it to prepare myself to see Devil's Rejects.
Okay.
So like I didn't see it until then. My guess is that Devil's Rejects was already out on home video, and I did both back to back, back with the probably like Netflix when we still actually got discs from them, you know. Yeah, and my wife wouldn't watch them with me back then. I finally got her to watch them with me now, she didn't like them as much as I do, but I still like them quite a bit.
Yeah.
Yes, and I've owned them now. After that, I ended up buying copies, so I have them on DVD, and then I also have them digitally. So, you know, I've watched them a good few times each, and I guess probably the best thing to do would start right with that first one, which, Blaine, for those of the folks who maybe haven't seen it or need a little reminder, what's that movie about?
Well, I mean, it's about a bunch of stuff, but IMDb says two young couples traveling across the backwoods of Texas searching for urban legends of murder end up as prisoners of a bizarre and sadistic backwater family of serial killers. Does this film say it's in Texas?
Does it?
I don't think so. I've never noticed that. Maybe I just never paid attention to, like, badges or something like that on the cops.
I don't... Well, I mean, I don't remember it necessarily. Well, you know what? The cops are, like, rangers, aren't they?
They're rangers, but, like, I don't know. I always felt like it was, like, generic West. Like...
Well, to me, it's, like, generic, definitely not the Northeast, and that's all I really know. Because I'm from the Northeast, and, like, I'm like, it's not from here.
Yeah, I'm like, it's somewhere in the desert, which could stretch, you know, from probably not like, it's not like Arizona, but it you know, but that's completely, I don't know why I care so much about that. Because
you're from Texas.
Because I probably that's why, because nothing seems very Texas. But I mean, and that's kind of the fun of, I think, these movies, is there's a lot of weird inconsistencies that are fun, because it's like very much this like desert family, but like they're also kind of like hick hillbillies, and it's definitely like, you know, they say you make your first movie, you throw everything in it because you don't know you're gonna make a second one, and this right. movie has got tons of that, and really a lot of my favorite shit from House of a Thousand Corpses is like weird, like interstitials, you know, with like the skunk ape scene, you know, and like all that fun stuff that he just threw in there. Like, and you kind of see a lot more of like his music video making, like carryover, which I like that he's gotten a little bit more serious as things have gone, but it's still really cool. It's very like late 90s, early 2000s kind of filmmaking. So, you know, but I love it. I love the family dynamics. I like the weird casting of having, you know, like Chris Hardwick, Rainn Wilson, also Walton Goggins, who to me, you can see he's that dude is a fucking beast of an actor.
As little as you actually get of him in this movie, he's so good in it.
To me, he's like the real, like, of course you got like the performances by, you know, Sid Haig, which is the performance of the movie. But I would say the second one is Walton Goggins, because no disrespect to our guests, but I don't really think we get that great of Bill Moseley in this one as much as we get in the follow-up. Like, we get
And I feel like they really didn't develop his character until the second one, you know?
Yeah, he's just Chop Top in this one.
Right. And like not as enigmatic as Chop Top either. Like, I like him in this movie. I love him in the next two.
Correct.
You know what I mean? So like it's like I feel like both he and Rob probably realize like we're underutilizing this character. We need to do more with him. But that said, I agree with you. Sid Haig is the star of the film for me. Like, he's just every scene he's in, he's so good. But you know, Chris Hardwick plays a guy that's really, really, really easy to hate. I hate him so much. I just, from the moment he is on the screen, I want to punch Chris Hardwick in the face. And it's not even just because he's Chris Hardwick. Because normally I want to punch him in the face because he's Chris Hardwick. But like, his character is just such a complete asshole and moron. Like, and there's something about that just really works in this movie, because I think there's already a built-in, even though like the second movie is where you really get to see the characters who are the villains in this first one, and even the villains throughout the series, where they get to be like the stars. But like in this movie, you already get a little bit of that, because the actual like quote unquote good guys, or they're not really good guys, but the victims in this movie are all just like, at least the males are kind of worthless.
Well, dude, the women are morons.
They really are. Four of them are shitheads. That's fair. Four of them are just shitheads.
See, I was going to argue that this movie always knows who the stars are, which is the Firefly family, because
I mean, that's fair.
Are the dumbest one-dimensional characters, which I know, I love going through the complete brainless world of IMDb reviews. And like a lot of people complain, they're like, oh, you know, like all the you know, like the teen characters at the beginning are just so one dimensional. It's like, yeah, because they're just fodder. All it is a way to introduce the real stars of the movie, which is, you know, Sherry Moon, you know, Bill Moseley and Sid Haig. Also, like, some of the extra characters that are in here are a lot of fun. Grandpa Hugo fucking rules. I love when he's still watching the Munsters and just talking shit. Like, to me, is just so funny, just watching him just, like, go off about what he would do if he had that, if he had that car and everything. Like, I don't know. I think the guy's a fucking blast.
What about the whole like stage show thing? The stand-up comedy.
His stand-up, and he's like, "You're gonna wake up, Grandma." That thing, and then course the baby singing the Betty Boop song.
Yeah, or when he's doing the stand-up, he keeps telling jokes about pussy that are not funny at all.
Well, they're funny because it is so like hacky and weird. Yeah, no, which we get that again. I love that gets brought up again in Halloween 2.
Oh, you're right. Yeah.
Daniel Lee Phillips, I believe is his name. Well, I don't have him pulled up on here, but he does like almost like that very, very similar routine of like disgusting yeah, vagina jokes.
Yeah, yeah, it's yeah. I know what you're saying now. But now you say that, I'm like, oh yeah, I guess you're right.
You're gonna wake up, Grandma.
Oh Lord. So ultimately, I think this first movie is clearly a good start to where he's gonna go, but it's not. I don't know. It's missing a lot, you know, of the stuff that's going to come in the future. Like I'm having a hard time with my words here. Jeez.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
You get what I mean. Like it's definitely just like the first step. It's not like the actual what we're going to get down the road.
Yeah, but I'll tell you what though, and maybe this is a way for us to just transition into Devil's Rejects.
Yeah.
But Devil's Rejects abandons one of my favorite parts of House of a Thousand Corpses.
Okay.
Which is Dr. Satan.
Agreed.
Like,
yeah.
That is the one thing that bums me out because it is so silly, crazy, and over the top that, like, I love Dr. Satan. And I love that this stupid, completely made up on the spot story, like, becomes real.
Mm-hmm.
And like this entire like the entire satanic cult thing is based around this idea of Dr. Satan. Like, and I don't know, I think it's incredibly fun, and maybe it's just one of those things where it's like, what do you make a story about with Dr. Satan? But yeah, I absolutely love it, and that's my biggest problem with Devil's Rejects.
Huh? I mean, I can see that. That makes sense. Like, I definitely think that it's a bummer that storyline is dropped. But at the same time, like, that's probably the only storyline, only thing introduced in the first one that I don't think is built upon and made better moving forward.
Right.
You know, some of the stuff that you call, like, you know, fun flourishes of, like, late 90s cinema, I think I also call, you know, bad, like, student film bullshit. Like I can't stand some of the just jump in and out stuff that he does in that first one. He does so much less of it moving forward, and I appreciate that, but I know that like it is definitely harkening back to some of his music video skills and stuff like that, so I can see like why it happened like that. But I also think it was to a certain extent like him trying to be more artsy or something than he really is.
Right. And I mean, and I do think that falls under that category when I said, like, he's clearly thinking that he's going to only make one movie.
Right, so right.
He doesn't waste anything that he has, which, I mean, on one side, like, I enjoy it, but it does make for a very exhausting watch. Because that is one thing that I'd say about House of a Thousand Corpses versus the other two films in this trilogy.
Mm-hmm.
It is the most exhausting in ways. It feels much longer than its runtime.
Yeah, yeah. And I think some of it is because of that kind of stuff.
Yeah, because there's a lot going on, man. We're going in from a group of teens, then the cops, and then Dr. Satan, and then like he just keeps going and going and going, just hat on a hat on a hat on a hat on a hat. Which, to me, being, you know, a fan of over-the-top stuff and, you know, bizarro cinema, that appeals to me. But as, like, an actual, like, as a craft, it's kind of sloppy. But sloppy doesn't always mean bad.
No, you're right. And I don't want to say it's bad either, but I think it feels like a crutch. It feels like something he doesn't have to lean on in the future, which I appreciate.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, like, and with that said, I mean, we might as well just hop in the Devil's Rejects.
Yeah, so let's talk about Devil's Rejects. So, again, Blaine, what does IMDb have to say about this? Because I'm sure they're just so dead on with their wonderful synopsis of the film.
Well, it's guaranteed one thing. It does not have any punctuation except for at the very end, because that's how we write IMDb descriptions.
Long run-on sentences, yes.
Yep. The murderous backwoods Firefly family take to the road to escape a vengeful police force which is not afraid of being as ruthless as their target.
Okay. That's I can pretty, see that.
It's on the fucking nose, but I mean, like, It's what it is. What's kind of, because you kind of came into the series
around
the
time.
So what was it like going from straight from watching House of a Thousand Corpses, this kind of all over the place homage to every film made between 78 and 82, to watching Devil's Rejects, which is like this kind of straightforward,
like exploitation,
road horror movie. More like Sudden Fury mixed with Helter Skelter or something. I want you to walk me through that, because I didn't get the joy of that.
Watching them back to back, so here's the weird thing. Before the last few years, I remember liking, like before I came back to them in the last couple of years, I remember liking them both in a similar amount. So I feel like it wasn't as drastic from one to the other as I watch them now it is, because I feel like it should have been. You know what I mean? I should have been like, oh, wow, this is a huge step. But when I first watched them, I don't remember feeling that. And maybe I did, but I don't remember that. What I remember is revisiting them a couple years ago, where I hadn't watched them in a while, and going, oh, wow, from the first movie to the second movie, it's almost like he just completely learned how to make movies. Like, I think you're right. I think the first one's, and I never thought of it this way, but I think, like you're saying, one of the biggest things is the fact that, as you're saying, he crammed everything into one movie. I think you're right. Like, he probably figured, I'll never get to make another movie again. I'll be back to directing music videos. So let me just shove it all together and do everything that I've ever wanted to do. When he got a second movie, it was almost like, oh man, I guess I'm going to have a movie career. I might as well actually do a real movie and story. And like, so to me, like, he took the flashes he shows in that first one, and he builds upon them to be like a real director and a real storyteller. Now, I never will claim to this day, through the new film, through any film, that he writes great dialogue. I will never reclaim to this day that he is a great writer in general. But I will say that his writing from the first to second definitely takes a big step. And I don't know if it ever takes another step after that, because I think it's very similar from that point forward. But I definitely think there was a big difference there. But that said, like, when I rewatch them now, I definitely just think the second one is just a better crafted film. The characters are so much better drawn. He really lets, you know, kind of the three stars of the film in Sherry and Bill and Sid kind of like guide that ship and use their talents. Like, you know, you and I have had this discussion about, you know, Lords of Salem personally, and maybe probably mentioned it on other podcasts before, but like, Sherry should never carry a film by herself. It's not who she is. And when he asked her to do that with Lords of Salem, he took what was possibly his masterpiece and made it an only okay film. In this movie, and in the third one, she's annoying as shit sometimes, like she can be, like her character can be, but she is used in like the right amount to me, where like she can shine. And then the other two, you could let them carry anything they want, because they're both fucking great. And I just think like they really work together in this second film in a way that I don't know that I could have predicted watching the first.
Yeah, I know. I mean, because it is such a different film. Like, it is so, because even like myself, just having like, we had like a couple of years between releases or so, and I remember going to the movie theater and being like, all right, like from the beginning, I'm like, okay, this is super different, like way different from like just seeing what opens up with that, what I think is a fantastic shootout when they basically do the Texas Massacre shootout that you get in what's that, part three? Is that part three, Texas Chainsaw Massacre?
I'm sure we're doing that thing where everyone else
is yelling at us. You know, that I'm just remembering shit completely wrong. But it has like this stark reel, and they do those like quick cuts where they keep like just lingering, you know, where they keep doing still shots in between with the dramatic sounds and everybody's yelling and screaming. I was caught off guard. I was a little thrown off. I like it a lot. For me, this movie doesn't really get me until we make our way to Spalding's brother, played so fucking good by Ken Foree. Yeah, his brother, so Charlie. Good. Like, to me, that's when I feel like this movie really, once we get past, I'm sure 99.9% of our listeners have seen Devil's Rejects. I don't think I'm ruining anything. Once we get past the banjo, Sullivan and Banjo scenes,
mm-hmm.
I feel like that's where the movie actually starts being a fucking movie. Once we get into like the whole like, I'm gonna dig up these guns, then I'm gonna shoot you and I'm gonna bury you. You know, like that's when the movie starts picking up steam, and getting to that, you get an amazing, fucking amazing acting job by Diamond Dallas Page. What's his name? The chicken fucker Denny. Guy?
Oh, I don't even know who he is. I just know that he's hilarious.
Well, me and Brandon, we've had the joy of drinking with that guy over the course of a weekend before, and he was real fun and nice. But yeah, he's like a big time, like on the Chitlin' circuit as a comedian and does real well, but. Yeah, there's a lot of really fun stuff in here, but it's out of the three, to me, this is the one that I have the most conflicting opinions on. I love a lot of the stuff with Captain Spaulding, but a lot of it to me like is, I don't know, it just feels kind of hacky in a lot of it. A lot of like, I'm a crazy clown. Everybody loves a clown, and I'm like, Jesus, what are we on, like Hot Topic t-shirt, the script, you know what I mean? Like
I see what you're saying. Yeah. And again, it's probably more a lot to do with the fact that even to this day, we've discussed that, Rob Zombie, or I mentioned at least Rob Zombie is not exactly the best writer.
Yes. And that's the problem with this movie is I think some of the bad writing gets excused in House of the Thousand Corpses. But when you push it into like this real, like, hyper realism that we get in Devil's Rejects,
right?
So the you start seeing the zippers on the monsters a little bit, but I will say though, for me, in not saying one unkind word about Karen Black, I really enjoy Leslie Easterbrook in this film, especially the scenes with William Forsythe, because those to me are some of the best acting in the movie. Even when you think about how I'm trying to come up with a polite way to discuss the dialogue is not strong. I've got this problem with this is my biggest issue with Rob Zombie's writing. Not everything has to be like, oh, well, you can do a cock and fuck my face, fuck my brain, you're going to fuck my head, you're going to fuck... Like, after a while, that wears me down. And it's a huge thing that I think really, like, put a real ceiling on the success of my favorite Rob Zombie movie, which is definitely... why did I just go blank?
Halloween 2?
Not Halloween 2.
Your favorite Rob Zombie movie?
Dude.
I thought it was Halloween 2. Or Lords of Salem?
Lords of Salem. I don't know why I blanked on
we
that.
We literally already talked about that once, and now you're forgetting it.
Will you write down, will you edit that so I don't sound like there's actually something wrong with me?
I'll think about it. I'm making a note right now.
Okay, thank you. All right.
So
anyway. Let me start back over. The issues that I have with that kind of dialogue, I mean, to me, is what really messes up Lords of Salem. It's you have these really good realistic scenes, and they go into this like awful dialogue of just like brain fucking or skull fucking and all that kind of stuff. That like, as a person who mainly just speaks in obscenities, like a 14-year-old who just figured out swear words. Even I go, okay, what is this? And I think there's just a lot of opportunities for that kind of stuff that happens in this movie. But I still, like, I still enjoy it a lot. And I think there's some really, really cool choices that are made. I think this is where you see Bill Moseley really become the star of the series. Like, Spalding, he's got the great nightmare sequence at the beginning with when he's having sex with the woman and he calls her a whore and she shoots him and he wakes up next to his girlfriend. She says, he's had a dream. She said, how was it? He said, 50-50. And I always thought that was a great line. But a lot of stuff, but it's just kind of, this is more of a mixed bag for me as far as my enjoyment levels.
I mean, I have to say, since you brought up the scene, I'm not particularly fond of seeing Sid Haig's balls.
Oh.
I mean, they're really, really old and gross looking. Just saying. But it's funny. Specifically, I don't know. It's noticeable because they're extraordinarily dark, almost like he's dirty while fucking. And I'm like, oh, so you've got, like, balls that are covered in dirt. This is gross. Like, I don't know. Something about that scene really, really struck me as, like, I didn't need to see that. And
are you concerned for the amount of dirt on his balls?
I am. Like, I feel like somebody needs to wash his balls for him. I mean, it's pretty bad. I didn't think I was going to refer to somebody washing balls in today's episode, but I guess I just had to go there. You know, but yeah, I mean, I still see some of the clown shit as corny too, but overall I still like his performance a lot. I think we didn't mention Danny Trejo, who's great when he, you know, as Diamond Dallas Page's, you know, partner, you know, they're fucking all that. Those two are just great when they're on screen together.
Well, those two make the movie. And
while Sid Haig is like the thing in the first one to me, that really is just so good. I actually think he's probably better in the first than the second, but he's the only thing I could say is better in the first than the second. Like, as an actor, like, I had something about his scenes in the first. Maybe it's just by comparison, they're just so good.
Well, he gets better. He gets all the best material in the first movie.
He really does.
He gets the
Whereas
intro.
Whereas in this one, the best material is, like, I love Diamond Dallas Page and Trejo's scenes, but I think you got to give most of the best materials all with Otis. So this is where Otis's character becomes, like, the kind of the leader of the group, the de facto, like, you know, boss of the crew.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Yeah, no. So I think it's just a matter of not that the performances are anything this or that, but it's just all that, the good material just kind of shifts. And I think Captain Spaulding in this movie is just misused or overused. I don't know where to put it, but there's lots of fun shit though. I mean, like, I don't want to sound, because I'm discussing things that I'm critical of the movie. But it still doesn't stop me from being a movie that I watch nearly yearly. You know what I mean?
Right. Yeah. No, I like it a lot. And I mean,
I'm griping, but I'm griping about a movie that I legitimately love.
Right. And I mean, I do too. And
it's just not
but like I also we without. I don't want to go through this movie without hitting a few other. You know, in the first one, you talked about him using some of his favorite. Of his favorite, like, genre stars he brings in, like, from older movies. He did that in this movie. You got PJ Souls coming in. You got Michael Berryman as Clavon or whatever his name is. He's freaking great. And I like how he brings in some of his favorite guys again, you know. I didn't realize that Kane Hodder is one of the cops wearing a face mask. You don't actually see his face, though. but I found that when I was looking through things, like, Kane Hodder's in this? And I was like, oh. And like his later Michael Myers, Tyler Mane, makes his first appearance in a film as Rufus Firefly in this movie, which is a non-speaking role. But yeah, so I mean, you know, he brings in a few and you brought up the banjos, the Wendy and Adam banjo scene. That's Lou Temple.
Yeah,
who we've talked about here on this podcast before because he was in. He was one of the stars of a movie we talked about with the director earlier this year. So, I mean, pretty cool cast in general. Brian Posehn is pretty funny in his scene. I mean, I like this movie a lot. I really do. I think that like these aren't movies any of the three for that matter, where I have a lot of like deep, meaningful things to say about, more than I just like them as like horror exploitation like movies. That's what they are. They're just fun. I just kind of lose myself for an hour and a half, enjoy myself, drink some beers, watch some movies, and I'm good to go. You know, I mean, I think that's kind of, you know, really how I feel about all three of these movies in a lot of respect, with the second and now, as we're going to probably transition just in a minute to the third, those two movies especially are ones that I could revisit, I think, quite a bit.
Oh, absolutely. And let's also give him credit for putting women of a certain age. I think it's one of those things I noticed this time around when I was rewatching it, getting ready for the new film. I was like, oh wow, like it's pretty cool, like to make movies where like the sex appeal is all clearly above 40.
Another interesting point is, and I didn't think about this now that you're bringing up like women of age, but like, you know, both this movie and the next movie, there's a lot of nudity in both, and the nudity is not necessarily what you would expect as, like, you know, big, skinny, fake tit, you know, like, you know, models. It's like just regular good-looking women, you know, like big women, small women, it doesn't matter. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, no, I mean, I think it's kind of cool. Plus, you get to see Mary Warnoff makes an appearance in the film, which is always fun to see. And, yeah, no, I mean, I think it's a really... the cast, both male and female, are fantastic in this one. So, shit, I always forget PJ Souls is in the movie.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, she definitely is.
Yeah. Well, also, well, like for this week, I mean, we talked about this for you know, we talked about, of course, House of Thousand Corpses and Devil's Rejects, but the reason why we're all here is basically 4-3 from Hell. Which we want to just briefly talk about because the film has not been released yet. So, I mean, what did you kind of think of that film overall?
Well,
I mean, if you were to make it incredibly vague and not give anything away.
We won't even read the IMDb here. We won't even do that.
I mean, I think we'll do that.
Because they won't give anything away. I mean, but we won't even.
Do you know what it is? Do you know what the?
Oh, all right, fine. Let's read it. Let me hear.
Sequel to The Devil's Rejects.
Yeah. Oh man, that's so good. Oh man. Well, I'm really glad you read that then. Oh man, that's great. So, Three from Hell, is probably gonna end up being my favorite in the series. Definitely on par with Devil's Rejects and quality. Maybe a step up. I have to watch it a few more times. I have watched it twice already though. I watched my wife watched all three with me. Brooke watched all three with me because she hadn't seen them, and she wanted to watch the third with me and was like, I guess I got to watch them. And so she watched all of them with me, and so we kind of rewatched all of them over the last month. And I think watching them all, you know, one after the other, I think it does a lot of what the second one does as well or better. It brings in some elements from the first, and we won't spoil anything, but I mean, it brings in some things that I think pretty well, but in general, it's kind of just like the next step. I like how it works overall. I like how they bring another person into the fold with Richard Brake, who I think is going to be a Rob Zombie staple for a while, it just seems like. Because, you know, even in a horrible movie like 31, he was able to get praise. So kind of just a fun guy. And like this whole series, it's basically, as somebody told me on the internet as to why they don't like it, and I couldn't tell them they were wrong, but I like these movies. It's just another movie of people yelling at each other, and I really kind of like it. Yeah. So, yeah.
It is 100% a movie of people yelling and screaming at each other. But I think as these movies continue, he's getting better at making tight, well-made stories. That even though it's still the same old white trash yelling and screaming and stabbing each other and just absolute fucking mayhem, he's getting better at it. So, like, either you're in or you're out. Like, I don't think this is a film that's going to be winning a lot of... It's not going to be winning any new fans for Rob Zombie. It's not going to be making someone go, huh, didn't really like those last two, but this one's a lot better. I think that it's just... It's just the logical step in this trilogy, and for what it seems like, he's once again, Rob Zombie's back to promising the moon
right,
more movies and musicals now and all types of shit. So we'll see, but it lays the groundwork to keep this going in a way that I think is really enjoyable. Like you said, Richard Brake is an awesome addition.
He's the perfect fit into the family. Yeah, he is.
And of course, Bill Moseley's fantastic in this film.
He really is.
Sherry Moon Zombie is her best out of the three movies. I think this is her best.
I think you're probably right. Yeah.
Like, they do something with her to make. All right. I don't. You got to see it, because I don't want to ruin what they do with it, but it makes perfect fucking sense. I would say the thing about it is Richard Brake is so good that he's the standout of this film. Where, like, when we kind of talked about,
I mean,
Bill Moseley's great, and he gets a lot of really, right. He gets my favorite line. Bill Moseley gets my favorite line of the movie, but Richard Brake is just so good at being Richard Brake. And also, I was excited, and I hope that this transitions into more work with him. Bill Oberst Jr. Plays one of the victims in this film, and I know, at least I see it in my head, and I probably shouted at my girlfriend and stuff, but why isn't Bill Oberst Jr. working with Rob Zombie? I feel like those are like two people that should be coming together more. So hopefully, just at least in that small role, we'll see some more of him working with that, because it's great. Because also, he brings back people that I really didn't like from other movies, like... what's his name? Pancho Moeller, the Hispanic little person from 31. They bring him back.
He's fucking great in this movie,
great.
Dude.
Great. I love him. And I disliked him so much in 31. You also see, you know, Daniel Roebuck returns. You get my favorite out of kind of his stable, which is Jeff Daniel Phillips, which I totally said his name incorrectly earlier. And he's great in this movie. It's got so much. Holy shit. And one of my favorite funny little things is Tom Papa coming back in his movies, because he makes a couple little appearances in other films, including, did you know that Rob Zombie directed Tom Papa's Netflix special?
No, that's really funny.
Which is just funny kind of a family friendly, you know, PG comic. I wonder if those two...
That is really kind of hilarious.
Which, I mean, I'm not knocking Tom Papa. I think Tom Papa is about the best at what he does. As far as that sort of, like, anti-edgy comedy.
It is funny.
It's just a funny world to imagine Tom Papa and Rob Zombie being buddies. But I think this film where, like, if you look at the movie as itself and you watch it, it may not make very much sense, but this is a far more mature film. In a lot of ways. It's still yelling, screaming, oh, I'm gonna fuck this, I'm gonna fuck that, oh, cut your head off, blah, 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 blah. But you can see that this is coming from a man who continues to get better at his craft. Where I was so worried that this was gonna be a phone-in like 31 was. And
It's so not at all.
It's not. It really is. So any sort of trepidation you might have after seeing 31, because 31, let's face it, was like Walmart brand Devil's Reject sort of thing. Just delete that from your memory. Watch Three from Hell, and I think if you enjoy the first two, you're just gonna love this one. So
I agree. And you know. I would also like a shout out. I love seeing Sean Whalen in this movie.
Oh, yeah, Aaron Burr.
I love his scene. You think of him as the Aaron Burr commercial we were talking about.
This. Yeah, man, got milk.
To me, he'll always just, like, I can't think of him as anything but his character in People Under the Stairs. But, and I guess as we wrap up, yeah, there's a lot of people like Dee Wallace, some other folks in this, Clint Howard. makes an appearance in this one.
A great appearance.
He really is great. He's always great. Richard Riley, I love him too. But yeah, I could keep going. But the point of the story is, if you like the first two, this will be a movie you love. If you don't like the first two, then why the fuck are you going to go see this one anyway? But if you're still hanging out with us, you like the first two, because why the hell else are you listening to us? Unless you just really love our voices, which is just weird if you do. But we can record our voices for you, say whatever you want if you just pay us. So, but that said, right?
Yeah, we're gonna wrap it up. $75 an hour.
Hey, I'm cheaper than that, man. But they would want to hear your smooth voice, not mine.
Well, I have an online portfolio, sir.
Oh, yeah, you do. You do. Maybe we should have Cameo accounts where people can pay us to say things.
Featured at your voice featured on your company's sexual harassment video.
Oh man, I would totally act in anybody. In fact, I'll do that for free. If you want me to be in your sexual harassment video, just let me know. But
you know my voice is in a bunch of them, right?
Right, but that also just sounds really bad. Like, just isolate that clip. All right. So Pancho Moeller, I wanted to hit real quick because you brought him up. I just watched another movie with him as we're wrapping up, and I want to make sure I don't recommend it to anybody.
Okay.
So don't, man, I hate saying this, but don't see Candy Corn. I'm sorry, just don't.
Yeah.
I was so excited about this movie, dude. I was so excited about this movie.
I hate to be that guy, but I value our listeners and their discernment. Why would they do that to themselves?
Yeah, I just watched the movie because I was really excited about it. And it really, really disappointed me. So I won't say this. I won't say don't watch it. I'll say, you know, just go into understanding the name Candy Corn and the fall feeling that I was hoping for. It wasn't that. But the weird thing is, the reason I thought of it is because Pancho Moeller is not only in it, but he's the good part about it. I loved him in it. So I really enjoyed him in that movie. So today, instead of a recommendation, I'm going to give you a recommendation to not go see Candy Corn. Do you have any recommendations or anti-recommendations, Blade?
Any anti-recommendations? I mean,
or any real, or do you want to give people like an alternative of like a real recommendation?
I mean, like
before we leave,
I could tell like a bunch of stuff I think people should avoid. It too being the main culprit there.
Oh, man, I have to watch this so we can argue about it, or I can agree with you.
Yeah, I'm about to say, like, there's a good chance you could very well just agree with me because the movie's a fucking mess. But as far as suggestions go, a movie I wanted to just plug real quick is 2014's Coyote, starring Bill Oberst Jr. It's a crazy movie about a writer who is losing his mind due to like sleep deprivation and writer's block, and just goes full on like paranoid lunatic, and incredibly violent, incredibly crazy, but absolutely spectacular acting from Bill Oberst Jr., who, if any of you have ever seen Circus of the Dead, he plays Papa Corn, which he is fantastic in that film as well. He's just one of those indie actors that really, since he came on the scene, I believe he won an Emmy, I believe, for playing Lincoln in a TV movie. He's been kind of lingering in that in between indie market, but dude never phones in a performance, and Coyote is just a great example if you want to see what that guy can do. The film does make you kind of have to overlook some super low budget aesthetics that are in the film, but he's so good that after about 10 to 15 minutes it's like your eyes adjust because of his performance. So yeah, so that's one to check out. I believe it's on Amazon Prime and maybe a few others, but I'm almost positive it's on Amazon Prime. So check that out. It's a really cool movie and definitely will make you say, oh, yeah, why isn't Bill Oberst Jr. playing part of the Firefly family? Because he was fucking made for it.
Well, maybe he'll be the next part. Who the hell knows, man?
Yeah, man. 16 from hell or whatever.
All right, yo. So thanks for tuning in, everybody. Thanks for sticking with us, coming back after summer break that we took that was extended more than we anticipated. But we're back. This is our second episode this week. You'll get one next, the one after. We got episodes cranking out for the next, probably till the end of October, probably almost every week. So thanks a lot, and thanks for all the support. And Blaine, why don't you remind the people before it's too late what they need to do?
Yes, what you need to do is, if you are a filmmaker, be going over to Film Freeway. Look up Buried Alive Film Festival in Atlanta, Georgia. We are in like the last 2 weeks of accepting submissions. We have a ton of fantastic stuff, but still have spots to fill, so make sure you head over there. If you do, shout out to us. Let us know you submitted. We know a lot of you guys have already, so that's so freaking cool. So head over there. You know, once I'm done plugging the actual submissions, God, I cannot wait to start pushing the actual film festival, because I've got so much cool shit I want to tell everybody. And this year we're going to be also running some specials. So if you are a listener, you'll be able to get, reduced pricing on our passes and things like that. So we'll get into that once we get a little bit closer. But as always, thank you guys so much. Like Justin said, we appreciate you guys understanding that we did end up, time got a little bit away from us on the break, but we're back and we're back to stay. So we love you guys. We'll see you next week, and peace.